Okay, we are here at Greek Club, reading through Galatians. I was told that we were going to start at Galatians 3:10 today. Does that sound right? Okay, so chapter 3, verse 10. Posoigar ex ergo namu eisen. Here the hosoi is a pronoun of, well, the Dag says comparative quantity or number. As many as this is true of, then you'll get a comparison, this is also true of them. In some ways it works a lot like pos ha, you know, everyone who does this, except here with the focus more on a group. So as many as are asin at the end, then ex ergon namu, and as is often the case in Paul, the smaller the word gets, the more difficult it becomes. Works of the law, or works of law, that's not a problem, right, for translation, with law, the genitive there of possession or relationship in this case. But what is the ek here? Both Bedag and Longnecker, in fact, just about anyone who works on Paul ends up trying to address how he is using these prepositions. I think Longnecker here is not too far off the mark when he says this means something like relying on the works of the law. It's a kind of existence that relies on works of law rather than relying on faith. So it's the source or basis of something, one's life, one's hope, one's justification, but it's ek in the sense of sort of source, or we might even say the foundational basis of something. So those who are in that sense of the works of the law, and hippa kataron asin. So as many as in the first part are this asin, they are, then just simply with the asin, hippa kataron. Hippa here in the sense of under, but in a more figurative rather than just a simple location, that it's sort of under the control of, under the domain of a curse. Now, I know this is a Greek club, not Galatians class, but you can still see how startling or striking that language is going to be to connect law and curse. So if you're of the law, you're under the curse. So the reader immediately says, how can that be possible? So Paul wants to support that with a gar. So gegraptai gar, and remember from grapho, you've seen this form a lot, the perfect indicative passive, for it stands written, has been written, and is still there for anybody to read, that, haughty, just indicating discourse here. Okay, and then we have this quote from Deuteronomy. Epi kataratos pos hos uk emene pasin tois gegramenois ento biblio tu namu tu poiesai auta. Okay. So the first word then, epi kataratos, adjective here being used really, depends whether you want to switch and make that your predicate or leave it as your subject, but if it's going to stand as the subject, then it's almost being used like a noun, right? Cursed. And we usually leave the same word order here. Cursed is, then pos hos. And here you have that similar kind of construction as the hosoi. Everyone who... pos with the relative pronoun there. oukemenes, who does not abide by, you see it translated, persevere in, stand by. It usually takes the object in the dative to abide by something. And here then you have the something as the pasen tois gegramenois. So again, cursed is everyone who does not abide by or persevere in pasen, all that has been written. Again, the perfect passive there. En to biblio tu namu, written in the book of the law. And then tu poiesai auta, we have the article with the infinitive. Here is this purpose or result. This is one where Wallace even sort of debates with himself, which is that I think maybe a little bit of balance can go toward purpose here. It's not saying that if you remain you will necessarily keep everything, but that's your intention or purpose, is to do everything that's been written in the book of the law. So Wallace says if you're in doubt, it's probably safest to take it as a purpose. Okay, so then the whole quote, cursed is everyone who does not remain or abide by all things that have been written in the book of the law in order to do them. Okay, now again, we're not going to exegete that, but you can see there's still a jump or two or 20 that's sort of missing in Paul's logic, but he expects us to sort of understand the point he wants to make here. Okay, verse 11. Hoti de en namo udes dikaiutai para to theo delon. And here you have a because with now trying to explain the point he's started to make in verse 10 with the de signaling, okay, now this is the next step here. But because en namo, again, how are you going to take that? In the law, by the law? It appears like it's the closest thing is probably like a dative of instrument, that this is what's used then to bring about justification. But essentially, I mean, the parallel is strong with the ex ergon namu of verse 10. So Longnecker takes them as equivalent expressions. By law, no one, dikaiutai, it's the present indicative passive, no one is justified, declared right, para to theo. Here, para in the sense of in the presence of, sort of alongside, in God's sight. And then delon, simply an adjective here, predicate adjective. The verb is simply assumed, and Wallace points out that really the haughty clause is the subject of the whole clause here. For this thing that no one is justified before God by law or in law, this is clear, this fact, this principle. How do we know that? Haughty, because ha dikaios ek pisteos zesetai. Because, and here again, you're taken right back to the sort of famous argument, where does the ekpisteos go? And you can see, really, it goes with both dikaios and zesetai. Because the just one, the righteous one, ekpisteos zesetai will live. How does this prove Paul's point? Well, if you're justified ek pistos, you would say the one who is righteous by faith will live. He's the one who's truly justified. If you're looking at justification as the sort of the opposite of being damned or not living in the day of God, then you'd say the justified one lives by faith. So both things work. In neither case is the law mentioned as playing a factor here. So either in the justification or in the living, that is in the surviving the judgment. Okay? Everyone still with me so far? Okay. Then verse 12. Ha de namos uk estin ek pistos. Okay. But the law is not of faith, based on faith. Again, if we're thinking more in terms of two systems that have different principles, different ways of operating, then you can see the point Paul's trying to make. Why is the law not considered ek pistos? Allah, so it's not this, but rather ha poiesos auta zesetai en autois. And here you have the article with the aorist participle of poieo. They're again used in place of a noun, so not the person who does them, that is the doer of them, zesetai en autois. And here you see the en coming back in, which is probably influencing Paul's use of en namo in verse 11. So it's not ek pistos, rather, that is, on the other hand, the one who does them will live by them. So it's based on not believing, but doing. Okay. And verse 13. Christos hemas ex agorasen ek tes kataras tu namu genomenos hyper hemon katara. Okay, a little bit simpler sentence structure here for the first part of verse 13. Christ, our subject, then ex agorasin from ex agorazo. You can see the idea of redeeming, buying out of a certain situation. Bedag glosses it as simply as deliver or liberate. To secure freedom for something, with the something then being the ek. So he has bought us, that is ek agorazo, out of ek tes kataras, redeemed us, liberated us, with hemas then as the direct object, from the curse of the law. Genomenos, aorist participle from ginomai. For the sake of our summer Greek student joining us this afternoon, remember that when you see that stem change to the epsilon there, you know you're no longer working with the present tense of ginomai. Genomenos, that's masculine, singular, referring back to Christ. So he bought us out of this, becoming hyperhemon in our behalf, for us, katara, a curse. So how does he do this? By becoming a curse for us. And then again, Paul uses a quote to back up this statement. How could Christ be a curse? Hoti gegraptai, because it is written, it stands written. Epi katarotos pas ha kremamenos epi xilu. Participle here, epikataratos we've already had up above, cursed, accursed, and again the pasha with the participle, everyone who from kremonimi to hang on something with epi, And so everyone who hangs upon the wood, in this case, more specifically, the cross, a tree. So cursed is everyone who hangs upon a tree or a cross. Hina eis ta ethne, he eulogia tu Abraham genetai in Christo Jesu. Now, why did he do this? He redeemed us by becoming, and then almost in parentheses, the hati and the quote, then continuing with that thought with the hina. So he became a curse in order that eis ta ethne, to the nations, he eulogia, the good word, right, the blessing of Abraham, genetai, and Christo Jesu. This blessing might be to them, come to them. Sometimes ginamai with ace actually has this idea of a change of location rather than sort of the change of condition of become. So this word will come to them. And again, a second purpose, hina tain epangelion to pneumatos labomen diates pistos. And in order that, going to pick up our verb, there you have the aorist subjunctive, that we might get, receive, obtain, and then the accusative article, or excuse me, accusative object, the promise of the Spirit, dia tes pisteos, with a dia here indicating agency, so through faith. What kind of genitive is pneumatos? You'll see some division here. I think probably the majority today would say it's the gift that is the Spirit. That is, that the promise of the Spirit is that you will receive the Spirit Himself. Any questions so far? I don't know if I'm covering everything well enough or not. Seems like we're going too fast. So, then verse 15. So Adelphoi, starting a new section now, here you can see in the plural, of course, there's no real difference in vocative or nominative, and you're starting to see the two cases really almost merge, with nominatives being used where you might have had vocatives earlier. But here, brothers, speaking now directly to his readers, kata anthropon lego. So I am speaking kata anthropon. Remember, kata can indicate a certain standard according to which something is judged or evaluated. Here it's in the sense of, from a human perspective, this is the way, you know, normal people would think or speak. So that's the idea here. And he's giving a little illustration now from ordinary human life that will make the point he's been working to establish. Homos anthropu kekiromenein diathekein udes athete a epidiatasitai. Homos is a particle you don't see that often. It's an adversative particle, and it usually means nevertheless or yet or something like that. Bedag says that Paul's use of it, he uses it twice in his letters, is peculiar, yet analogous to the way John uses it, or the way you see it in John anyway. So he says they're usually explained by a kind of dislocation, that the nevertheless is placed first, but really it should come later. So you get something like your main clause, udes, then, no one, athete, from atheteo, to set aside in the sense of either nullify or just simply ignore. And then a, the conjunction, or epidiatasitai, changes, that in the sense of adds extra lines to a diathekane, a last will here in the sense of its usual, ordinary sense. Kekiromenane is from kirao, to confirm or ratify, to make something legally binding. So no one will set aside or add to, that is, nullify or add to a will of a man that's already been ratified. Okay, so let's see. Again, this is how Bedag paraphrases. Even though it involves only a person's last will and testament, nevertheless, no one annuls it. So, syntax is a little confusing, but I think the meaning is clear enough. I don't know, should we stop there, or I don't know who has to run the class, but... Okay, I will leave you. That way you'll come back next time to see how it continues. So we'll leave you holding your breath here. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.